This is a SIVA podcast, a series which is part of the exhibition Institution Building. Institution Building displays and questions the diverse elements of a museum, from the most visible parts, such as the exhibition, to the often unseen or hidden components, such as archive, administration, maintenance. The exhibition will grow week by week, with an institutional element added sequentially, presenting the institution as a cadavre exquis, an ever-changing organism constantly de- and reconstructing its raison d'être.
Wonderful to have Wael Al-Hawar with us. We will speak about his and Kenichi Teramoto's project Wetland, which just won the Golden Lion at the Venice Biennale of Architecture. Hi, Wael.
Hello, Nicholas. Thank you so much for inviting us to this conversation. It's really a pleasure and looking forward to it.
Yeah, Wael, you curated together with Kenichi, this project Wetland, which I think when I saw it in Venice, it's really a very bold and really courageous experiment that forces us to think about the relationship between waste and production in general on a local and global scale. And I think in a way it really opens up a perspective to new construction possibilities that in an interesting way negotiate between the vernacular and high tech. I think they're both aspects very, very present in the work. And so what you can see in Venice is this kind of large scale structure based on rather small scale prototypical elements. And it's very much a story about cement, and which I think is a particular important topic today, right, in times when this very material is starting to be criticized more and more. Maybe you could describe the genesis of this project, how it came about and what your motivation was.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, we are practicing architects, you know, and we run a firm called YY, and we build a lot of projects. So, you know, and we know today there's a climate crisis, and we as architects have to be responsible and held responsible against the material we use and their impact on the environment. So starting to think about that and being in the UAE, particularly in the UAE, you know, there's not much material. So you turn to modern material. That's the material available in the market, which is cement, steel, etc. So, and we knew that cement was a catastrophic material, and we already had started reading and understanding the CO2 emissions caused by cement, as well as other issues related to waste, etc. And, you know, countries like Japan or Lebanon, for example, where I'm from, we can turn to the vernacular, which offer us more sustainable approaches, although I don't believe they will be sustainable on the long run, because today we're a population of 7 billion people, growing to 10 billion by 2050. And the calculations, the mathematics don't add up anymore. So, you know, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation report states that we will have to build the equivalent of one New York City every month over the next 40 years to meet that growing population. So how do we really do it? You know, that was really the question that was really bothering us at some point. You know, it is impossible to continue with cement. And I mean, and it is impossible for us in the UAE to turn to the vernacular. It doesn't exist. The vernacular was coral. So, you know, they built houses from corals. Today, there are no more corals in the sea. And the reason of that is the reject brine of desalination water, which has killed all the coral and marine life in the sea. So in search of a truly sustainable material that can offer us real possibilities to build the future cities in the GCC. And, you know, it started really from there. And then once we had that as an intent, we started trying to unravel the problem one by one. It's a very methodological process that we really followed. And it wasn't a genius idea that came overnight, you know. The first problem was to understand what is the problem of Portland cement. And the problem of Portland cement is actually the binder, the glue, which is lime. So, and the problem of CO2 emission is the conversion of limestone to lime. So if we find a replacement to lime, then probably that can offer us a solution to having a more sustainable cement product in the market. This is a geological problem, limestone, lime, it's something in the earth. So we went on a quest, you know, I started walking the land, looking at the earth, trying to understand what is there in this earth that can probably offer us a solution. And this is where we stumbled on the sabkhas of the UAE, the salt flats of the UAE. And as you can see in the exhibition, you know, you have these cementitious crusts that are, you know, very, very much well bound together. So you can immediately see that there is a strong crystal glue working in this top layer of the sabkha. And that captivated us, you know, that really captivated me, and trying to understand, okay, what is making this, what is this binder in the sabkha, or what is this binder in the salt flats?
Which I think led you really on in an interesting way to, I think you also kind of invented also a different quality of cement. Well, there are predecessors, yes, certainly, yeah, but usually cement or concrete, it's, well, you need a lot of other materials to make it strong. So there's a kind of strength issue here. And
right.
So in a way you came up with basically strengthening the strength, sounds like a little bit like a pleonasm, but which has to do with the compressive forces also.
Right. I mean, again, you know, this cement is, you know, is based on magnesium oxide. That's what we discovered. That is the glue that binds it together, you know, and it has a different crystal formation than Portland cement. And we had to work with biochemistry labs and, you know, advanced material building research lab of NYU Abu Dhabi to really teach us this stuff. We don't know it, you know, as architects, but we didn't want to fall short, you know. In the beginning, we started creating some cement products, but they were soluble, meaning that they would absorb humidity, dissolve, etc. So, you know, we didn't want to stop short. We always spoke, and I think, you know, I'll mention a dear friend we both know, Shumon Bassar. I was talking to him, and he said, you know, you don't want to stop short. You have to push this as far as possible. You know, you don't want something that really is a temporary structure. Let's go further and look for a permanent structure. And pushing the scientists and really thinking hard together, we were able to really go out from our comfort zone and understand different ways that would strengthen that cement. And the end product was that this cement needs to absorb CO2. It's a carbonation process that it has to go through in order for it to lock itself in and become a permanent material with the same compressive performance strength as Portland cement. And this was like, oh my God, you know, kind of the reciprocal. Yes. And it wasn't something that, you know, we really planned. And the beauty of the material, it absorbs 18% of its mass in CO2. So it has to absorb that. The problem with that is that at this point in time, it still has to exist only as a precast system, because you need to put it in a carbon chamber, meaning that, you know, if to carbonate it, you cannot carbonate it as a cast in situ system. So that is the the, let's say, the disadvantage of the system at this point, but I'm hoping we can push the research further and probably discover other ways to carbonate the system.
I think another aspect of this work is quite fascinating to me is this somehow this combination between high tech, what you've just described, but on the other hand, the connection to the builders on site.
Right, right. Because
you told me once that there are no, when you build these drawings, there are no drawings. So
yeah, there are no drawings.
Can you describe that process? Because I think it seems to offer a possibility to work a bit in this tension between a high-tech globalized environment and on the other hand, very local practices.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, this is a collaboration with Tokyo University that we worked and two laboratories, which is Sato-san Laboratory, Structural Engineering, and Obuchi Laboratory, which is in digital fabrication. And the idea is that, you know, we've re-questioned modern material, but how do we re-question also the modern production of space? And that was very important for us. You know, the issue of standardization, the issue of globalization, if we are making this new product and this new product needs to be carbonated, means that it needs to have a new system in place or a new methodology that has to produce it in order for it to work. So the idea was that, you know, how do we bring back culture and identity into the making of this prototype? And then, you know, the decision was to make an homage to the choral vernacular architecture of the UAE by deciding to draw choral forms into sand molds, and then pouring the concrete. And every time we did that, the forms would be different because the first prototype was done in Tokyo. They had different imagination of what a choral looked like. And then when we did it in Venice, the builders had a different imagination of what the corals looked like. So as architects, we were no longer producing drawings, but we were producing a method or kind of like a handout which guides the builders into how the system could be built. But yet, it to add further complication to that, you know, we need to structurally calculate the model, right? So that it's open to public, that the Biennale wants a proof of this is calculated structure and it will not harm any public user. I mean, the president of Italy visited the Biennale and walked through the structure yesterday, I believe, before yesterday. So they needed that verification. So this is where Obuchi-san's lab came into play, and they actually reprogrammed devices from the gaming industry, which the builders actually wore on their hands to guide them within the virtual model that was projected onto the space through sensors in the ceiling. This is very difficult to explain without really actually seeing the process itself. Then we had scanning devices that were connected to Tokyo University Structural Engineering Lab computers and their programs. So it was kind of, let's say, being updated constantly with an as-built model as the builders built. And we had to pause every layer, say, which is half a day's work, and wait for 2 hours for the structure engineering team to verify the structure, and then the builders could continue going. So it's a kind of an as-built model calculation that goes in hand with the building process. Mm. So there are no drawings. This is like the antithesis of modern architecture. The architect's not there. Yeah. I mean, it's part of the building.
I think this is really exciting how the role of the architect shifts. And I think this is, I guess, all of us sense that the role of the architect or the very profile of what an architect does is going to change in the next few years. And I think your project also shows certain possibilities of continuing or changing material approaches. And maybe what Mark Jarzenbeck once wrote for us at eFlux some years ago, an essay called The End of the Quadrivium, which is the end of concrete, steel, glass, and rubber.
Right, yes.
Maybe this was, of course, a provocation, but certainly these materials will change.
Absolutely. I mean, again, these are materials, I think, you know, vernacular was materials found in nature. So we went out, you know, we consumed our stone, we consumed our bamboo, we consumed our trees. And then the modern came, and these are, you know, materials synthesized in labs, but they're still based on extraction from earth. And this is what's happening, right? So at some point, how much can we still extract? I mean, the question we pose in the pavilion is that, can, you know, vernacular, can industrial waste be the future vernacular? You know, can we start looking at our waste material as our vernacular material and stop extracting from the earth and producing our new materials? We still will continue to extract for agricultural purposes and, you know, industrial purposes and all of that. But someone has to start somewhere from a much bigger picture. And this is, I think, the reality of the future.
Thank you, Weil. This was really good. And I think it's a real projection to the future. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you, Niklas. Thank you.
You've been listening to a SIVA podcast.